and the Sakis would hide, and that when Krishna would harass them, then they would all come and retaliate. So again, the next day came, and Krishna and Madhu Mangal, they were blocking the way and demanding tax and harassing Radharani. And all of a sudden, there are only 10 Sakis, there's only 10 cowherd boys there, and about 200 gopis. They came running down from the hills, and they attacked Madhu Mangal and Krishna. And in fact, they took the milk pots and they poured it on Krishna's head, and then they took the yogurt and they poured it all over Madhu Mangal, and then Madhu Mangal became very furious. He said, "I'm a Brahmin, and just see what I get for associating with these cowherd boys." And they started pulling his ears and pulling his sika and harassing him. And this is the connection with Suryakund. And then when they were harassing him like this, then the gold bangle that he got his dakshin, it was wrapped up in his dhoti and it fell out. And then when they saw it, they said, "Just see, you stole Srimati Radharani's anklet." Then they harassed him even more. And any details of that story that I left out, then when Dinabandhu Prabhu speaks about Jagannath Das Babaji, he could add anything else. Jai Jai Sri Radhe.
So since we're here in the place of Padasevana, I'll just say a little more about the service of the spiritual master and the Vaishnava. That actually none of us have any qualification, really, for being in the holy dham, or for entering the pastimes of Krishna or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But by rendering service to the spiritual master, to the mission of the spiritual master, one gets the mercy of the spiritual master and thus becomes eligible to enter into the holy dham. And when we enter the dham also, we need the association of the devotees who can explain to us the pastimes of Krishna and the science of devotional service. So occasions like Navadvip Dham Parikrama are very important because it gives the devotees a chance to come together to the holy places and in the association of advanced devotees to hear about the pastimes of Krishna and the process of devotional service. So we're very grateful to the organizers of Navadvip Dham Parikrama and to all the devotees who are participating to create such a nice opportunity and association for chanting the holy names of Krishna and remembering the pastimes of the Lord. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments?
Govinda Lila Vrita explained also
was the pastimes of Krishna worshiping
because the Suya has different pastimes. So in Govinda Lila Vrita explained that after Madhu Mangal, once he heard the prasad and the jewels of Radharani, then on his way back he met Balaram and some of the cowboys. So they say, "What is this? I think she got there. She has some marvelous talent." Because everyone knows that Radharani's cooking is the best. So, but Madhu Mangal said, "Well, I'm a Brahmin, so why should I give you?" Because he's paying for the green Brahmin. So then what they did was they brought everything from him, told his sika, told him many years, pulled all his dhoti, and then they ran away with everything. And Madhu Mangal was crying. And then Krishna became a pastor. He told him that
very well. Question. Someone had asked a question before about the difference between Padasevanam and Dasyam. Someone
Someone had asked the question, what is the difference between Padasevanam and Dasyam? Well, Padasevana includes like direct service to the lotus feet, like Lakshmi. She massages the lotus feet of Narayana. And Dasya is also related, but generally Dasya means following the orders. So, well, the two are related, but one is the example of the servant who achieved perfection through serving the lotus feet of Lakshmiji, who would massage the lotus feet of Narayana. And the example of the devotee who attained perfection through Dasya is Hanumanji, who always executed the order of
to me, it seems that Padmasevanam is like a bhakti service to the, and Das is like a general, and the family service in general.
So Gorky Shordas Babaji Maharaj was a very exalted Vaishnava, and although he was illiterate in one sense, but he knew all of the truths of the Bhagavatam. And many Vaishnavas used to approach him for spiritual instruction. So even if he only gave initiation to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he had others that were taking instruction from him. And the authority for the little history that I gave is one book compiled by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, where he gives brief descriptions of the lives and teachings of various acharyas in the line. And it was translated for me by Bhakti Chiruswami, so that's how I read that.
We're hearing different pastimes of Radha Krishna, but how do we know whether the pastimes of Radha Krishna are bona fide? How do we know whether Prabhupada would want us to hear those particular pastimes or not?
Very good question. Well, our basic principle for receiving the question is that we're hearing different pastimes about Radha and Krishna, but how do we know that they are bona fide? And how do we know that Srila Prabhupada would want us to hear them or repeat them? So the basic principle is parampara, evam parampara prapta. And it's true, there are many stories, there are many songs, there are many maybe methods of worship, which are not coming strictly in the parampara, following Rupa Goswami and the other acharyas, especially Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and so on. So one way that we can determine if a story is authentic, if it's received from a qualified person in the disciplic succession. And the other way is that if we're very expert in the science, then if there's some rasa bhas or some incompatibility or inconsistency, then we can also determine that the story is not authentic. So, actually we have to be careful. I mean, I've heard stories which struck me as being different from some of the Siddhantas that we've learned in Prabhupada's books, through parampara. And, you know, by discussion with other more mature devotees, we came to the same conclusion that this story is not authentic. So there is some chance. So these are the only two answers. Check with some, you know, senior person in the parampara, or check, you know, in the books. And then if one is, you know, knowledgeable enough, he himself can detect if there's some defect. Now, regarding whether Srila Prabhupada would want us to hear, basically, the Nectar of Devotion recommends going to holy places and remembering the pastimes of Krishna. And I think the devotees experience practically that they do feel enlivened by hearing the pastimes. So it seems that even though we may not be so qualified to enter into certain pastimes or hear about certain pastimes, that by the mercy of the holy places, when we're there, we can hear about the pastimes. Just like on Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's appearance day or disappearance day, Srila Prabhupada said that we can pray to him directly, although on ordinary days we can't, generally. But on his appearance day, we get special mercy. We get the opportunity to approach him directly. So I would say, when we visit the holy places, also there's special mercy to chant and hear and remember Krishna's pastimes. Otherwise, some pastimes are considered confidential. Just like the Book of Indavila is actually meant for highly elevated souls, not for ordinary devotees. More information about Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj may be available with Lokamandir Prabhu. I mean, there are a few more things in the book by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. One or two incidents. Jagannath Das Babaji used to sit on the banks of the Ganges and do Harinam all day long. And one dog gave birth to five baby dogs. I don't know if there's a specific word. Puppies. He gave birth to five puppies. And yes, when Jagannath Das Babaji became very old, he couldn't see. He practically became blind. He was so old. So when he would take prasad, I guess the puppies would get some of the remnants. So one day, that person who was serving him decided to remove the puppies. And that day, Jagannath Das Babaji refused to eat. He said, "You can take away the food, I'm not eating today." So you can understand, he was disturbed. So then he went and immediately brought back the five puppies. Then he was satisfied. Then he ate. He took prasad. And he commented that these are animals of the town. They're not ordinary. A different little... Another one?
One time he said...
Some people were distributing prasad on Jagannath Babaji. He said, "Go all around distributing prasadam. Make sure everyone gets it." But he also said, "Make sure those rascal sahajiyas that I get this prasadam." She says that the relationship between Vishnu Kriya and Gauranga Mahaprabhu is not exactly the same as the relationship between Radha and Krishna, and that Vishnu Priya is one of the main distributors of the holy name in Navadvipa. And therefore, we should do Harinam Sankirtan. So that was... Loganath Swami says, tonight we have Sankirtan seminar. So, in the evening, all of the book distributors can contribute their stories. Radhananda Maharaj and Paranidhi are coordinating. Maybe this means I have to come back tonight.
Why does Lord Damash act hold his hands like this on the daily form? He has his hands like this.
Question is, why the Dhameshwar was changed? Ishwar. Dhameshwar is Ishwarabham. Ishwarabham of this time is the Mahaprabhu. Why his hands are in the front? Myself, I went to a place called Bankura, that's where they make the deities. So we're getting a set of deities for Padyatra. So the set that we had ordered had one hand up and one hand in the front. So we asked for explanation from the carver. And he said, the hand up meaning, the Lord says, Mahasaya, do not fear, do not fear. I am here, I am near. Do not fear. And he said, when hand is in the front, he says, come near and take Krishna prema. Krishna prema pradayate. He says, don't fear, come near, take Krishna prema. So here, Dhameshwar, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is so very merciful that with both hands, not with one, but with both hands you give Krishna praise. So you take as much as you like. So that's the one understanding I was given. That's
one. My understanding goes from Chaitanya Bhagavad. Gold Vishnu Priya is just like, it's called Gold Narayan. With Vishnu Priya, relationship is not like this. Like Krishna in Dwarka, like that. As Krishna in Dwarka is a prince, so Vishnu Priya will be the Shakti, one of the Shaktis like that. From Chaitanya Bhagavad, you understand. But as far as Sankirtan, is mainly is by Nityananda Prabhu and Janaka Mata. That is what I understand from Guru Bhakti Vinod Thakur. If somebody can throw some light, I'll be happy.
One thing we're also saying is connected to the matter of fear,
there are two types of conjugal relationships. One is called svakya, between husband and wife, and one is called parakya, which is the relationship of a paramour. So, because Vishnu Priya was married to Lord Chaitanya, that is svakya, and that is the relationship between Krishna and the queens in Dwarka. So what the lady said is correct. Is simultaneously one with and different from Lord Vishnu. Brahma Samhita gives the example that yogurt is not different from milk. It's the same as milk, but it is also different. And Sadashiva, who exists beyond the material world, and he has his own planet, so he is considered like a reflection of Narayana. And his planet, Sadashiva Loka, is considered a reflection of Vaikuntha. So they're very close. As far as the place that you visited, I didn't go there, I didn't hear about the deity.
She has one form with five heads, and it's called Panchana. But that has nothing to do with the universal form. That is, or she has not trying to exhibit its universal form. In fact, the Shiva is so anxious to see the beautiful form of the Lord, and he's so anxious to hear about the Lord, so sometimes he desires more eyes to see and more ears in order to hear. He's not satisfied with one head with only three eyes. Or one hand with only 2 ears. So he has sometimes 5 heads, so that he has 15 eyes and 10 ears to see and hear Krishna. And that way he still maintains his position as a Vaishnava, Vaishnavanam, Yathasam Bhu. But I read in an English book that has been translated by one of our devotees by referring to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Navadvipa Mahatma. He has compiled an English book. It is called Navadvipa Mahatma, Guide for Pilgrims. In that book, there is a translation from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Navadvipa Mahatma about Harihar Kshetra. It says the Lord exhibited this form of Hari and Har together to prove 2 points. One is that how dear is Shiva to him. Lord Shiva is very dear to the Lord. This one point is true. And the other point is that Shiva is not different from the Lord. So Lord, by exhibiting that form, Hari and Har together, is trying to make these 2 points, which have been briefly explained. He has 2 rooms. We have to understand that the Shiva is not a jiva. Brahma is a jiva. Brahma is a living entity. Other demigods are living entities. But Shiva has his own sattva. Shiva sattva. All other demigods, they kind of reside in Devi Dham. Goloka Namni Nija Dhamni Talecha Tasya Devi Mahesha Haridhamasu Teshu Teshu Te Te Prabhava Nishaya Vitashayena Govinda Manisham Namaham Bhajami. So all other demigods, they are part of Devi Dham. But Shiva is about Devi Dham. He has his own Dham, Mahesh Dham. And about that is Hari Dham, that is Vaikuntha Dham. So by some of this, this proves that Shiva is a very special personality, not one of those demigods, not a jiva, he's a Shiva, and Brahma explained that yoga function, milk and yoga are very much closely related.
Maharaj, we are partial incarnation, the partial incarnation of Vishnu.
So sometimes the devotees of Krishna, they don't want anyone to come near Krishna or equal Krishna. So that is why sometimes they wonder why, you know. Is this minimizing Krishna's position by saying Shiva is such exalted and non-different? And but actually that is Shiva's position. And we must accept it that way. Otherwise, we'll be offending Shiva. So not only we should be careful not to offend Krishna, that we always do, but and not getting the proper understanding of who is who or who Shiva is, then we end up offending Shiva. But then by offending Shiva, in fact, we also end up offending Krishna. So we have to be careful and give a due importance to Shiva also. Is Vaishnava, he has two roles. Very unique personality. So he's a Vaishnava, Tapas Vaishnava, at the same time he's very close to Krishna, closer to Krishna than anyone else. Like in Simant Tadvi, Parvati appeared, the consort of Shiva, and Gauranga Mahaprabhu, as he made his appearance, he was trying to convince, yes, you are my consort in Golok Vrindavan, Radha Rani is close to me, and here I have given you assignment in this world, and you are Pravada Maya, or you are Yoga Maya. So this kind of Pravada Maya in Vrindavan, in Saladeep, and Yoga Maya in Vrindavan, that is Parvati, that is the Rudrani, who is associating with Shiva. If Parvati is a counterpart of Radha, then Shiva becomes a counterpart of Krishna. That's kind of like connection. So like that, by understanding the position of Parvati and explained to her by Gauranga Mahaprabhu in Simant Tadvi, we also can understand how exalted that husband of this Parvati must be. As Parvati and Radha related, so similarly Shiva and Krishna also related. So we need to understand this.
He says that one of the offenses against the holy Dham is to consider the residents to be ordinary. Then he says that we distribute transcendental literature to ordinary people who don't have knowledge so they can get knowledge. But transcendental literature, like Srimad Bhagavatam, is beneficial to people who are ordinary people, people who are aspiring for liberation, and even people who are already liberated. Atmaramas Chamunaya. So, just like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, in his last days he was always reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, because he was relishing the pastimes of Chaitanya. He was feeling the presence of Chaitanya. So the transcendental literature is beneficial for all classes of people. To take birth in the Dham is very extraordinary. So unless someone had some contact with devotional service in the past, we can't expect them to take birth in the Dham. Now as far as the creatures
in the Dhamma. Srila Prabhupada has said that they were devotees in their past lives, but due to committing some offenses or some sins, they took birth as plants or animals in the Dhamma. And he gave the example of the Nalakuvera and Manugriba. They were devotees, but they offended Narada Muni, so he cursed them to take birth as trees in Vrindavan. So Srila Prabhupada uses that story as evidence to the effect that persons who were engaged in devotional service but who committed some offense take birth in some form or other in the Dhamma. And after spending one life in the Dhamma and becoming purified of the reactions to their sins or offenses, then they can be promoted in the next life. Like the two demigods who took birth as trees, they went back and became demigods and pure devotees. And ultimately they went back to practice. But that we say that that in order to take birth in the Dhamma, one must have had some contact with devotional service in the past. But he sees that the people in the Dhamma are not engaged in devotional service. If they did devotional service in the past, then they should begin from the point at which they left off. You see, there are different divisions of devotional service. There's like Vaidhi Bhakti, Raghunuga Bhakti, and so on. Now, the residents of the Dhamma may not be following the rules and regulations of devotional service very strictly, but they have some sense of Krishna consciousness. For example, when we were in Vrindavan, one day a yogipati and some devotees went to Varshana, and there was one five-year-old boy who was tagging along with a yogipati and asking money. So a yogipati went to give him money, and he kept following. So a yogipati picked him up and carried him all the way to the top of the hill in Varshana. And then they went all the way back down together. And the boy kept insisting. So there was one life member devotee from Delhi. So he said to the boy, five-year-old boy, "We have come from Vrindavan. We're not just tourists. But if you like, you can come with us to Vrindavan." So he said, "No, no, I can't go with you to Vrindavan." So the life member devotees said, "Why not?" He said, "Well, if I go, my mother will get upset with me, because he was only 5 years old." So the man said, "Well, but if you come with us to..." Oh yeah, he said, "Anyway, what benefit will I get if I go to Vrindavan?" So the man said, "Well, if you come with us to Vrindavan, you can see Shyam Sundar." So the boy said, "Shyam Sundar? Who is Shyam Sundar? He's just a cowherd boy. Radharani is the queen around here. And we're interested only in Radharani, not in anyone else." So this is a five-year-old boy. So he may not be trained in all the rules and regulations, but the sense of devotion is certainly there. And that is passed on through the generation. Do they not work? Now it's time for prasad. There's one little question. What was the date of the discovery of Lord Chaitanya's birthplace? So I think it would have been around the turn of the century, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur passed away in 1914. And before that, he discovered the birthplace He took collections, went door to door in Calcutta begging 1 rupee from each person, and built the first temple there. So that would be the estimate of the distance. Shri Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj Ki Jai.
Well, everyone take darshan and come here. Please go in, take darshan. Those who are finished, come under this tree here.
Bhajan Kutir of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, Param Vaishnava, Vaishnava Sarvabhauma, Bhakti Vinod is holding Vaishnava, the universal Vaishnava. He's an example for the entire universe of Vaishnava. The Maharaj is something about Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, and he already told the story that I was going to tell. It was much easier than I could have told it. But I only know a couple stories about Jagannath Das Babaji in Vrindavan. He was saying in that Suryakund, he had very, very beautiful deities. Those deities are still in Vrindavan, right next to Prem Takis. Prem Takis is a place of pilgrimage for all the Vrindavanis who want to see the cinema.
What's the name of the deities?
They're called Sonar Garanga. The Sona means gold. So these two Gornitai deities were so beautiful. They're Astadatu, but they looked just like gold. So he was saying in this far off place in Suryakund, and as we know in Bhakti Vinod King, there was many dakshas. These deities must be made of gold. And they also attempted to steal them, but they were unable to lift them up. And when, later when Jagannath Das Babaji left Vrindavan, then he left those deities there in Vrindavan town under the care of some family there. Those deities are still there in Vrindavan, just near Gopinath Mandir. He just asked for Prem Takis. Right next door to Prem Takis is Sonar Garanga Mandir. Another time Jagannath Das Babaji was in Jagannath Puri also. And for some reason or another, the king, he was looking for some tree. He wanted a tree for making something, for carving something. And he sent his men around, and they came to Siddhabakul, the place where Haridas used to always chant and see the chakra. And they saw, here's huge bakul tree, very nice and fat, just what the king wants. So when Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, and he heard about this, he protested in so many ways, but none of the king's men were ready to listen to him. So when they came, the next day, Jagannath Das Babaji, he was alone. All these army men were coming the next day. They were going to cut down the tree. And he was praying all night to Mahaprabhu that what to do, these people won't listen. This tree is a very special tree. This is the Siddhabhagul tree, Haridas Thakur. So in the night, and the next morning, the soldiers came, so here's this, we know Jagannath Das Babaji was a very thin fellow. So against soldiers, what can he do? They just pushed him out of the way. And as soon as they began to look closely at the tree, and even today, if you go there and see the tree, it's completely hollow. They said, this tree is useless. So they, somehow or other, by Mahaprabhu's mercy, hearing the prayer of his devotee, he saved this Siddhabhakul tree. You go there, it's still hollow. No one will bother it for anything. Our Shashi Mataji is doing very nice cooking there. Everyone used to hang stones just for their material desires. But she's made these nice little pottery stones with Hare Krishna in Bengali made into them. Is Shashi Mataji here?
Shashi Shekhar.
So anyway, so there's a little hole in them, so you can put your string and tie. And so she's made it the system now at this Siddhabhakul, that you tie the string and you chant Hare Krishna and you put the you have to hang the nam from this bakul tree. This is a tamal tree which are under here.
That Siddha bakul tree is still alive, only with the outer pit.
Yeah, only the outer pit of it. The whole tree is completely hollow. So we found out where the prasad is?
Yes.
Do you know where the prasad is?
Yes, right here. Yeah.
The prasad is on the side of the river? It's coming. It's on the side of the river.
Right there.
We have to go on the other side of the river again.
This is not that side. This is old Ganga. So this is not all the way for water.
We know how to get there.
All right, let's go.
But can everybody hear me? In the back? Okay. Now, we try to do something with Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu today, Nectar Devotion. We have limited time, maybe less than 40 minutes. So, but I do want to give a little bit of a summary of the later half of Nectar Devotion. So I think it will be possible to achieve something. You may ask, how's that possible? I thought of one analogy. It's just like an artist. If let's say he's doing a sculpture of a head. Now to put in all the details, it may take him many, many months. But maybe the basic shape he can do very quickly. That's how the artists do. They don't just work on the details, but they work on the basic shape, and then they go to the next level, and next level, and it becomes finer and finer. So I'm hoping that within this 40 minutes, I can perhaps give the basic shape to the later divisions of Nectar of Devotion, which devotees are not as familiar with. I can see that the sound system will be very much required because I don't think my voice will... I still doubt if some of the people can hear me in the back, and it's a little bit of a strain, but we'll continue. So, first we'll give a little overview of the whole Nectar of Devotion. It's called Sindhu, and Sindhu means an ocean. And an ocean has four sides, according to the directions. Every ocean, east, south, west, and north. So the eastern division is what we mostly study. And what the eastern division does is it describes, it gives you a general description of devotional service. And the various types of ways of practicing devotional service. Another nice analogy that Rupa Goswami gives is between and the ocean, the sides of an ocean, they also have different waves. So there's four sides to the Nectar of Devotion. They're called divisions: eastern, southern, western, and northern, and they each have waves. For example, in the eastern division, which in our Nectar Devotion is the first 19 chapters, there is four waves.
Okay. It has to definitely be friendly, right? Otherwise it makes that sound.
So we'll quickly review, and all of you have should at least study the first 19 chapters of Nectar of Devotion. So from your own mind, you can see how much you remember. So the first wave of this Eastern Division is a general description of devotional service. Rupa Goswami is a scholar, so naturally he will first generally discuss the subject matter. So the first chapter, he describes the six characteristics of devotional service. How do we identify it? What its symptoms are?
And then other topics that he discusses, for example, is who's eligible for devotional service. These are general topics. That's chapter 3. And the exalted purity of devotional service, that's chapter 5. So in the first 5 chapters, he gives a general description of the characteristics of devotional service. Then beginning in chapter 6 of this Nectar Devotion begins the second wave. The second wave is called sadhana bhakti. Now that you know the subject matter and you know its glories, then certainly you want to practice it. For example, one of the glories that Rupa Goswami described about devotional service is that the taste, the relish, the experience from this bhakti ras is so nice, so wonderful, that even if you take the happiness of Brahmanam, the liberation, he says, and you multiply it, he says, by 1 trillion fold, that will not even equal a drop of this bhakti rasamrita sindhu. This bhakti ras means the taste of devotion. Amrita, the nectar, sindhu, this ocean. So bhakti rasamrita sindhu, it's described in the first wave, the first 5 chapters, this nectar of devotion. So it's such a wonderful thing. Now how to practice it? So in chapter 6, it begins to discuss how to practice devotional service. Prabhupada gives a nice definition to practice. Practice means to engage the mind and senses in some work. So devotional service in practice means to engage the mind and senses in Krishna's service. Now Prabhupada gives a very nice example to help us understand this. He gives the example of a child walking. A child walking, it's not exactly a practice, Prabhupada said, because a practice generally entails learning something that's external to you. While a child practicing to walk is not learning anything that's external to him, but he's bringing out something that is inherent within him. So the child walking, it's not actually a practice, but by trying to walk, the walking capacity comes. So similarly, by trying to practice devotion, by engaging our mind and senses in Krishna's service, then the inherent quality of bhakti, which is in the heart, manifests. So this is called sadhana bhakti, or we practice. Actually, bhakti is not there initially. There's different definitions of bhakti. But one definition of bhakti is that by the practice of devotional service, all the different practices, and when you become purified in heart, and completely free from material desires, then, by the mercy of the devotee, bhakti is bestowed upon you. So chapter 6, it gives one of the items. There's 64 items. This is according to Rupa Goswami. He analyzed the 64 ways to engage the mind and the words and the senses in Krishna's service, so that inherent quality to love Krishna will manifest and come out within the heart. And therefore, it's the duty of the acharya to find ways and means to engage the disciple in such a way that the devotion comes out. So there's 64 items. Now, what's very interesting about these items is they're an expansion of the 9 items. Actually, there's 9 items of devotional service. And as we've been traveling in the Gaurmandal Parikram, each island represents a different item. What Rupa Goswami has done is he's divided the items into further categories so that the total number of items is 64. So this is the second wave of devotional service. It begins by listing all these items of devotional service. So then chapter 7, chapter 8, chapter 9, 10, 11, they're all describing these items. For example, chapter 10 is called Techniques of Hearing and Remembering. So what this is, Prabhupada made this chapter, but what it really is, it's just discussing the items of Shravanam and Jhana. This is nice. Jhana, remembering. Guna, you can meditate on Krishna's qualities. Lila, you can meditate on Krishna's pastimes. And what is the fifth way of dhyana or meditation? Someone can, not someone who has taken the class, but someone who hasn't. There's a fifth way of meditating. This is a very wonderful item. There's Jan Nam, Jan Rup, Jan Guna, Jan Lila, and there's Jana Seva. You can meditate on service. And there's the story of that Brahmin who in his mind, he was very pure, but he was worshipping the Lord within his mind in so many gold pots and getting the water from the holy places. And then he was cooking the sweet rice. And Prabhupada says sweet rice is best when it's cold. So he was testing it in his mind. And then he burnt his finger. But then when he woke up, he saw that actually his finger was burnt. And then there was Narayan and Lakshmi, and Narayan began to smile, and Lakshmi said, "Why are you smiling?" And then Narayan called the Brahmin, and by his service he went back to Godhead. So all these chapters discusses the practices of devotional service, and there is two ways to practice devotional service. There's ekanga bhakti, and there's anekanga bhakti. Ekanga means that you can become perfect by practicing any one of these items. And there's different examples that are given in Nectar of Devotion of different personalities who have perfected each item. Has that been I guess it's always been mentioned as you go to the different places, like Padasevana, today at Koladweep, Lakshmi, and at Madhyadweep, Smaranam, Prahlad Maharaj. And that's ekanga, and a nekanga means not one, you can do them all. Who is the example who of the personality who performed all the items? Who's that? Ambarish. Who knows that verse? Savaimana Krishna, Padada Vindayo, Vaichamsi, Vaikunta, Gunarna Varnane. Anyway, it goes on. Explains all the items. So, from chapter 6 up through chapter 12, all these items are listed. And then the last five items, Rupa Goswami mentions again in a very nice chapter, chapter 13, which is called Five Potent Items of Devotional Service. Now this is very significant for those of you that are on parikram, because it's recommended that when you're on parikram that you should only do these five types of items. I have an experience that I was in the room and then all of a sudden someone brought in a newspaper. And I was just thinking that this is actually not allowed. We should concentrate on these five potent items. And Rupa Goswami explains why. That he said that even a neophyte, if he executes any of these items, he can attain devotional ecstasy. Devotional ecstasy is Srila Prabhupada's translation for the term bhava. And there are examples of this. Now there are five potent items, and these are the items that we should solely dedicate ourselves to on parikram. And you'll actually see that on parikram we do nothing else but these five items, practically. So who can name the five items? Very good, Gadadhar. Are
chanting.
Okay.
And hearing Srimad Bhagavatam.
Residing in the holy place, yes.
then there's association with the Lord.
Sadhu Sangha.
And worshipping the deity.
And worshipping the deity, Sri Murti. So these items are very, very powerful. And if they're done properly in the right mood, they can change your heart. And the symptoms of bhava will manifest. Now the Rupa Goswami, if I can have a glass of water. I'm not thirsty, but the kind of. So the he gives a very nice example. Because one of the symptoms of bhava bhakti, this is discussed later on, there's 8 symptoms. Jiva Goswami warns us that when we want to see if someone actually has bhava or emotion, ecstasy for Krishna, we cannot judge it by the external symptoms. I mentioned this before, because they can be easily imitated. Someone will come in here and he'll cry, he'll roll on the ground, he'll faint. But he said you judge it by these symptoms which we could really determine. And there are 8 characteristics. Utilization of time was one of them. And the one that it illustrates is detachment. Detachment, there's different types of detachment. Because one type of detachment is the ability to remain aloof from the sense object. But the first class, there's actually 5 types of detachment. They're analyzed. But the first class detachment is called viraktir. And that means not only remaining aloof from the objects of the senses, but being completely indifferent to the objects of the senses. And therefore, as Prabhupada said, real detachment means that even in the midst of allurement, one remains indifferent. And the example of that given is Bharat Maharaj. Because Bharat Maharaj was a great king. You can imagine, he was only 24 years old when he renounced his kingdom. And king means beautiful wife, it means unlimited riches, it means so many people worshipping you. Dhanam, Janam, Sundarim, all these things. But when bhava, or ecstatic emotion, was awakened in his heart, he was so indifferent to these things that he gave them up as easily as one gives up stool after evacuation. So this is actually the symptom of bhava, one of the symptoms. Complete detachment. Indifference. So Rupa Goswami, he explains these different items, these 5 potent items, and how they can manifest. So I'll just explain one of them, called Sri Murti. seeing the deity. This is one of the items you can see on Prikram. What do? We see different deities. And we chant Hare Krishna, then we hear Srimad Bhagavatam, then we associate with the devotees, and then we take the dust of the Dham. And we think of the Dham, and we get the mercy of the Dham. So we're only doing these activities. So seeing the deity, so Rupa Goswami gives a famous quote, a famous verse, that illustrates how seeing the deity can make one completely indifferent to the material world, which is a symptom of bhava bhakti. Very famous verse, but he says it in a very ironic way. I don't know if ironic, but he uses a literary device where you say something, but it actually indicates the opposite. So Rupa Goswami says, don't go to Vrindavan. He said, don't go to Keshigat. And don't see the form of Sri Sri Radha Govinda. Because if you do, you will become completely detached from friendship, society, and love. So what he's saying is, if you do see the deity in the right mood, then you will become indifferent to the material world. This is a symptom of bhava. I saw this once happen in Vrindavan, that there was this one man from Israel, and he was an older man. He was in his 40s, and he had children in Israel. And he was an unlikely person to go on pilgrimage, because usually you see someone young, like 20 years old. So he came to our temple, and he saw the beautiful form of Sri Sri Krishna Balaram. And he just looked at the deity, and then he gave up material life. He surrendered. And he became so indifferent that he was, you can imagine, it's very difficult when someone starts older in Krishna consciousness because he has so many attachments. So he was, it's just like he was at 40 years old, and he was getting letters from his children in Israel, and he would show me the letters. They would say, "Daddy, Daddy, don't get involved in the cults." It's like this, they were. So this chapter is very nice, chapter 13. And when we're in the Dham, and we're on the Parikram, if we concentrate on these activities, we can actually achieve something. This is a very nice opportunity that we have here on Parikram. There may be some austerities, some difficulties, but actually it's possible in just a short time, 9 days, to actually achieve something in terms of your advancement in Krishna consciousness. So that's chapter 13. Then chapter 14, it discusses, because all the items now have been discussed in this second wave of the Eastern Division. So all the items have been discussed, and Rupa Goswami is a scholar. So then he discusses what the angas are, parts of devotional services. Then he discusses what is not bhakti. He mentions different things. For example, he discusses vanashram. Is vanashram bhakti? He says, no, vanashram is not an item of bhakti, but in the beginning stage of devotional service, we need these to help us in our Krishna consciousness. And in similar ways, he discusses jnana, cultivation of knowledge, vairagya. Very interesting analysis in this 14th chapter, the relationship between these things and devotional service. And that's where he quotes his very famous verses about yukta vairagya. Does anybody know those verses? These famous verses.
Anasaktasya visayan yatarahanu pralyudhata nirbanda krishna sambande yuktam vairagya muchate prapanchikataya yasya. How was it? Hari Sambandhi Vasana Mamukshavita Parityago Palu Vairagya Tatyate.
Famous verses about what real detachment is. Not to reject something that can be used in Krishna's service, but to reject the conception that something is mine. So this chapter was, many things were discussed like that. And then to finish the second wave, in chapters 15 and 16, he discusses Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti, the practice of spontaneous devotional service. And then the third wave of the Eastern Division is the discussion of Bhava Bhakti. That's chapters 17 and 18. And then the fourth wave of the Eastern Division is Prema Bhakti, which is the fourth wave. So this is a general description of the different practices. It's very nice how this whole division ends, because he's discussed, we don't have time here to discuss the differences and the characteristics of Bhava Bhakti, Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti, Prema Bhakti. But all these things are discussed, and finally he gets to Prema Bhakti. And he gives a description of Prema Bhakti, characteristics, what it is, and how to achieve it. And then he ends the division with another very famous verse, where he says, but the best way to achieve love of Godhead, of course, this is our goal, this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give, Prema Pumartha Mahan. The artha, the highest value, the highest goal, is to attain Krishna Prema. And he gives the best process. It's another famous verse. Does anybody know that verse? knows it? Yeah. What? That's a very Anyabilashita Sunyam, that's the first verse. Because Anyabilashita Sunyam, Jnana Karma Dinabitam, Anukulyena Krishna Nashilana Bhakta Uttama, that describes the characteristics. In every scripture there's what's called the Paribhasa Sutra. One sutra that expresses the meaning of the whole book. Just like in Srimad Bhagavatam, the Paribhasa Sutra is Ete Chamsa Kala Pumsa. And every verse can be that's the main verse. So in Nectar Devotion, the main verse is Anyabilashita Shunya Jnana Karma Jnabritam Anukul Yena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakta Uttama. The prime characteristic is Anukul Yena Krishnanu Shilanam. Anushilanam means activities, Krishna, to Krishna, Anukul Yena. Favorable activities to serve Krishna. That's the prime characteristic of Uttama Bhakti. That's the first verse. Not the first, but it's in the first 10 verses. Prabhupada puts it in the introduction. The prime subject matter of the book is Uttama Bhakti, that's not the verse. It's the last verse of this section. Someone mentioned it. You can say it along with me. I don't know the whole thing. Maybe I do. Adau, Shraddha, Tata Sadhu Sangha, Vajana Kriya, Syat, Anartana Vritti, we can mention the stages then, Nishta, Ruchi, Ashaktis, Bhava, and Prema. So he mentions at the very end, it's very nice, the best process is this, Adau Shraddha, beginning with faith and taking association of devotees and executing the principles of devotional service, then the dirty things in the heart go, and then we become fixed. We get some attraction for Krishna consciousness. That attraction thickens, and we become addicted. Then, at that point, we enter into bhava bhakti, where we actually can serve Krishna fully with our emotions. And then finally, prema bhakti, where we're established in our relationship with Krishna. We actually serve Krishna with the full conception, the full understanding that Krishna is my son, or Krishna is my master, or Krishna is my friend, Krishna is my son, or Krishna is my lover. And that's prema bhakti. So that ends the Eastern Division. How much time left do we have before Prasada? What? 15 minutes. Okay. So now the Southern Division. Now what the Southern Division describes is how rasa is developed. Rasa, Prabhupada describes that rasa means the relish or taste of some activity. This is called bhakti rasa. In the preface, Prabhupada discusses this, that this is the goal of life, to actually experience ecstasy in our relationship with Krishna, which is completely different from the rasa in the material world. Prabhupada gives different terms for the rasa in the material world. What is the taste in the material world? He says, chapala sukha, bhoga tyaga. It's flickering. We're not satisfied. But what is the rasa? Bhakti rasa. This is what the whole nectar devotion is about. The practices of devotional service are supposed to bring us to relish the mellow or taste of devotion. Bhakti rasa. Amrita. And what is the difference between that rasa, that experience, that relish, and the relish in the material world? Bhakti rasa amrita. It's eternal. And sindhu, it's fully satisfying. So it describes how rasa with Krishna is developed. Now, rasa with Krishna means a particular affection that one has for Krishna. That's one's rasa. Like one affection may be, oh, Krishna is my son. Another rasa may be, oh, Krishna is my master. But what really rasa means is not just these affection, this particular affection that one has, but how this affection is developed fully by various types of ecstasy. I'll try to make it a little bit clearer. For example, Mother Yasoda, her affection for Krishna is maternal. So that's not rasa in itself, but it has to be developed into rasa. So the first thing is, there must be some excitement. There must be something to bring that out. We can look at it, let's look at it just from a mundane standpoint. How does a mother, how does her affection for a child develop? Well, there has to be some stimulus. So what is that stimulus? Well, she sees her child. And by seeing her child, that motherly affection comes out. Then, when she sees her child, the child is so cute, the child is so small, he has so many wonderful qualities, then her maternal affection develops. And then, after it develops, then she may do some activity. She may smell her child's head, or she may bless her child, or she may offer her child some milk from her breast. And then, and by doing these activities, her maternal affection comes out more. In other words, there's different ecstasies, but this is in a mundane sense, there's different pleasures that she experiences. It's not just maternal affection, but also it's stimulated by different things, like the qualities of her child. And then it's stimulated by different activities that she performs in the service to her child. And then it's also developed by different disturbing emotions she has. Just like she has a little child, and then all of a sudden she sees the child is crawling on the top of a fence, and the child could fall, and she becomes fearful. So that fear, it brings out her maternal affection even more. So what the Nectar Devotion discusses is how the different rasas with Krishna are developed by different ecstasies. So we can discuss them briefly. So in the Southern Division, the five ecstasies that actually compose rasa are described. And then in the Western Division, each rasa is described by these different ecstasies. In other words, each rasa is analyzed. We'll just describe. So there's the... And Prabhupada gives the terms. The first term is called Stai Bhav. Prabhupada defines that as continuous ecstasy. It means what one's feeling is. The Stai Bhav of Mother Yasoda is maternal affection. The Stai Bhav of Rakta is he's a servant. The Stai Bhav of Lalita is that conjugal love. So that's the continuous ecstasy. Then that ecstasy will be excited. And this, so the basic cause of that is it's called Vibhav, how it's excited. So the basic way that the ecstasy for Krishna in a particular relationship is excited, the basic way is by Krishna and his devotee. It's like there's a friend of Krishna's. So the basic way that his ecstasy for Krishna and friendship gets excited is when he sees Krishna. And he sees Krishna's qualities. And he sees a devotee of Krishna who is a friend of Krishna. And the way that someone in has that maternal affection, the basic cause of their ecstasy being stimulated is to see Krishna with a devotee of Krishna who loves Krishna in that way. But they're not the same in the different rasas. For example, when we say Krishna in the for someone in Vatsalya Ras, whose basic affection for Krishna is maternal, then Krishna means the basic cause that will stimulate her ecstasy is seeing Krishna as a child. Seeing Krishna as a young child, running naked, little five-year-old boy, or Kumar age. And someone who is in conjugal ras, their basic stimulus for their ecstasy for Krishna is seeing Krishna as Kishore in a different age. And the friends, they see Krishna in Pulganda. That's the age between 5 and 10. What I'm realizing right now is that my summary has been okay up until now, but there's just too much detail. So I'm just going to give, and we only have a short time left. So I'm just going to describe the first type of ecstasy again is the basic cause. So that means Krishna's qualities. So if you look in the southern division of nectar devotion, there's also five waves. And they describe these different ecstasies. So the first thing that is described is Krishna's qualities. This is the basic cause of developing ecstasy, by seeing Krishna's qualities. So maybe we should just describe some of these qualities and just relish nectar devotion. So one quality of Krishna is that Krishna is forgiving. So when you see Krishna and he's so forgiving, then one becomes very ecstatic. So a very nice example is given. It's a quote by Jamunacharya. Jamunacharya said that Lord Ramachandra is so forgiving that even though Indra took the form of a crow and attacked the breast of Sita, simply because Indra surrendered, then immediately Lord Ramachandra is so forgiving that immediately he excused the offense. See how wonderful Lord Ramachandra is. But Krishna is even more forgiving, because Krishna was insulted by Sishupal in the assembly of the Rajasuya sacrifice. But Krishna did not take any offense. And not only that, but he was not only forgave him in one life, but Krishna is so merciful, even more forgiving than Lord Ramachandra, that he forgave him in three different lives. Because he forgave him also in Jagai and Madhai. So in three, so he says Krishna is most forgiving. Another quality of Krishna that the devotees appreciate is that Krishna is all honorable. This means that a respectable personality. So the example that is given in Nectar Devotion is that Krishna was in Dwarka, and all the great demigods came to see Krishna. Actually, I think what we can do, if someone can hold this, maybe you can just read some of these qualities.
At least this one is nice.
A person who is chief among all important persons is called all honorable. When Krishna was living at Dwarka, demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Indra the king of heaven, and many others used to come to visit him. The doorkeeper, who had to manage the entrance of all these demigods one very busy day, said, "My dear Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, please sit down on the bench and wait. My dear Indra, please desist from reading your prayers. This is creating a disturbance. please wait silently. My dear Varuna, please go away. And my dear demigods, do not waste your time uselessly. Krishna is very busy. He cannot see you. So many nice qualities of Krishna are mentioned. Another quality is, there's so many nice. Oh, is, this is very nice. Grateful. This is a very wonderful quality. Even in, I think Lord Kapiladev describes it as one of the qualities of intelligence. And I think Prabhupada said, only a fool will not be obliged or grateful to someone who has helped him. One time I was in Dallas, and Srila Prabhupada was giving a lecture, and then he asked for questions, and one devotee stood up. I remember his name. His name was Ganagamya. He's about 6'4". And he stood up and he said, Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada liked this question. He said, Srila Prabhupada, how can we repay you? And Prabhupada said, just remain obliged. So the example given in Nectar of Devotion of how grateful Krishna is that Krishna said to Draupadi that when she was being disrobed, and then she just surrendered completely to Krishna. And she just said, Hey Govinda! And then Krishna protected her. And Krishna said to her that simply because you chanted my name, I am eternally grateful to you. So just see how wonderful the qualities of Krishna are. Even someone does so much favor for us, may do so many things, and still we may not remain obliged. But Krishna, simply he hears his name, he becomes obliged. Just imagine if you become obliged. Yes, it's nice someone chants your name, Jai, such and such, once. Yes, but just once, Krishna is saying, I'm eternally grateful to you. And Prabhupada made the comment in the purport. So how powerful is this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra that we're chanting? That Krishna has this wonderful quality of being grateful. How much more time do we have? A few more minutes. So that's one thing is Krishna's qualities. That's the basic cause of bringing out this affection for Krishna is his qualities. And other chapters also discuss more qualities. There's 64 basic qualities. Then there's four types of heroes. This is particular types of heroes. And Krishna has the incredible quality of being all different types of heroes, even though they're contradictory. For example, one type of hero is called Dhiro Datta. And that means very brave and Dhira Prashant. Dhira Prashant means very brave and very noble. The example is given, just like Maharaj Yudhisthira. You can imagine his type of chivalry. Then there's also Dhira Lalita. Dhira Lalita means brave but romantic. And there's descriptions of Krishna's activities with his naughty activities with Srimati Radharani. That's a different type of bravery. And then there's even a bravery called Dhiro Datta, which is brave and arrogant. So Krishna is both brave and noble like Maharaj Yudhisthira and brave and arrogant. An example of Dhira Datta, brave and arrogant, would be Bhima. You know in Mahabharata, I'm not so conversant, but there's many stories of we appreciate, we're attracted to Bhima. I was thinking, I always try to think of examples in the material world. I was thinking like an example of a brave and arrogant, where people were actually attracted would be Muhammad Ali. Everybody used to like him, you know, he was so arrogant. And then also there may be some great statesmen. So Krishna is all of these. And there's examples in Nectar of Devotion, how Krishna is brave and arrogant. And I think the example, this is really a wonderful example. We can Let's read it. This is an example of Krishna being brave and arrogant. This is what he said to Kalyavana. Krishna addressed him as a sinful frog. In his letter, Krishna advised Kalyavana that he should immediately go and find some dark well for his residence, because there is a black snake named Krishna who is very eager to devour all such sinful frogs. Krishna reminded Kalyavana that he could turn all the universes to ashes simply by looking at them. Then is another way where Krishna, on fighting with a demon who was approaching, appearing as a deer, Krishna challenged him in this way: I have come before you as a great elephant named Krishna. You must leave the battlefield accepting defeat, or else there is death waiting you. This challenging spirit of Krishna is not contradictory to his sublime character, because he is the supreme being. Everything is possible in his character. So in drama, a hero has to be one nature of or another. But Krishna has all different characteristics of a hero. And of course, so this is basically Krishna. Krishna is called Vishaya. He's the object of devotion. And then the other cause of ecstasy is the devotee, who is called the Shraya, or the reservoir or abode of love. So there's a chapter that's discussed next where it's called the devotees of Krishna. So there's basically two types of devotees, and by hearing about them, our ecstasy and our affection for Krishna will come out. One is called the sadhaka, and one is called the siddha. There's three types of siddhas. That means perfect. One is nitya siddha. Nitya siddha means eternally perfect. The residents of Vrindavan, they come for Krishna's pastimes. Another is called, who knows the other types of perfected human beings? Kastuva? Kripa siddha, by mercy. Sadhana siddha, yes. And there's three ways in which one can become perfect by mercy, although Prabhupada said, don't try for it. He said, try for the practice, not for the mercy always must be there. It's interesting how Prabhupada defines practice. Prabhupada defines practice as chanting and hearing day and night in the association of devotees. This is the example of sadhana. And mercy, there's three ways to get mercy. One is by the glance, one is by the words, and one is by the wishes. An example of the wishes is when Narada Muni was instructing the wife of Hiranyakashipu, who had Prahlad Maharaj in her womb, and Narada Muni was explaining to the wife of Hiranyakashipu, whose name was? Who knows? What? And when Narada Muni, out of compassion, was thinking, I hope that the child within your womb also understands this message of Srimad Bhagavatam and also becomes pure. Another example is Magrari the hunter. What was his practice? He didn't have a chance, but he became perfect by the wishes of the devotee. This may also help to answer the prostitute question that was asked to Sridhar Swami. Tell me, someone asked him a question, how the prostitute, with Haridas Thakur was there, how the prostitute became advanced so quickly. And of course he gave a very good answer that she was an Indian prostitute. But there's another way of looking at it, and that is mercy. The Prabhupada said we shouldn't try for it. Does anybody remember the example he gave? Very good. Gadadhar is getting, yes, made it. Yeah, an honorary degree. Someone may have no education, do something, and he's made like the doctor of law. There's no practice, but he gets that degree. Prabhupada said, just like that, we should not try for it. it may come. Of course, mercy is always involved. There must be mercy and there must be efforts to become perfect. This is illustrated in these...